It's time for Squawk Talk, talking business to business. Squawk Talk highlights business and business owners in the Atlanta area. Squawk Talk is brought to you by Eagle Carpet Care and Restoration.
Well, good afternoon. We're broadcasting live from the Eagle's Nest in the heart of Atlanta. Welcome to Squawk Talk, where we talk business to business. I'm your host, Kate Skirmerhorn with Eagle Carpet Care and Restoration. We have a very special panel guest today. And joining me in the studio today is a panel of industry experts in the field of short sales. Today we'll be discussing topics that face homeowners, buyers, sellers, and those in the industry all related to short sales. So let's take a minute to get to know our panel guests. First guest on our panel today is Joshua Jarvis from the Jarvis team. Joshua, why don't you take a minute to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
We have a team here locally in Duluth, and the past 5 years, really, this is the first year where we've seen more traditional sales, but for the past 5 years, we've been doing short sales, and we've done well over 100 short sales in those 5 years, and it looks like this will be a continuing trend, at least for the next year or two.
Okay, very good. Our next guest is Tal Kramer from Atlanta Communities. Welcome, Tal.
Hi, welcome. Thank you. My wife and I have been a team in Atlanta since 1991. We serve North Atlanta, mostly in the north and west side, and we've been doing short sales for quite a number of years, residential sales and property management.
Okay, very good. And our final panel guest today is David Perry from the law offices of Perry & Associates. David, tell us a little bit, giving us a legal perspective from the short sales. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, we have a real estate closing firm. We do other things, but primarily real estate closings. And about 5 years ago, we heard a lot of complaints from realtors about, I hate these short sales. They're so difficult. So we decided to create a short sale department to help process those to try and earn or gain a relationship with realtors and continued flow and referral of business.
Very good. All right, well, let's start off the show today since we're talking about short sales. Let's just open the first question to be, let's talk about what exactly is a short sale. So give us some descriptions and talk a little bit about so people have an understanding of exactly what the short sale is.
It's pretty straightforward. It's basically where your lender or lenders have agreed to accept less money than what's owed on the property. That's the simple definition. Now, getting there is never simple.
Right.
That's okay. That leads us to the next thing is, why would somebody feel the need to short sale a property?
Well, it kind of started with the Great Recession, 07, 08. Real estate prices fell in the Atlanta market about 40% on average. But one thing people need to be wary of, it's all different in different pockets. There are some areas, such as South Forsyth, that had very little drop in price. And there are other areas that had a 70 or 80% drop in price. So the federal government did not mandate it, but they advocated banks and other lenders being kinder. So they put together a process. They said, if you need to get out of your home because of a hardship, and at first the hardships were a little bit more stringent, you know, you had to be going through a divorce, you had to have a loss of a job, you had to have a medical problem. As time went on, they expanded it more, but they tried to find a way to help people move on, and it had an added benefit to the lenders that they could liquidate some of these non-performing assets, mm-hmm. get some cash back, even though it was less than what they're owed, and they could move on as well. And I heard someone speak about a year ago, they said that a short sale typically will net the lender 22% more than if they go through the foreclosure process. Because they have to pay attorney fees and advertising fees, fix it up.
So there's a little bit more incentive to take the short sale versus letting it go into foreclosure.
It's in their best interest. Yeah. It's really a win-win arrangement, I think.
So there was a time when a lot of people were refinancing a lot of their personal debt into their homes, and I think was that helping push some of these people into being upside down in their homes? Or is it just simply the economy turning, creating people losing their jobs?
Yeah, I think when you think about why a short sale, it's because the amount that they owe is just so much greater than what they could sell the house for. So any of those things, whether it's a loan or where they just bought it at the height of the market in 2007, 2008, and there's still many homes. Talk to a person today. They owe $200,000, and the best I could do is maybe get them $140,000 for the house. And so those kind of situations are still out there. And that discrepancy is what, you know, really the short sale was sort of made to do. It's the highest price that you can sell a house for outside of a traditional sale. I mean, it's going to get more money for the bank, ultimately less, you know, less liability, if you will, on the homeowner side. So, I mean, that's, I don't, you know, refinancing and secondary loans and those kinds of things definitely contributed to it, but I don't think that was the ultimate culprit.
Mm-hmm. You know. Yeah, I agree. I think the economy primarily, and then all the circumstances that resulted from the economy. But people are short selling. I've noticed in the last couple of years, it's trended from only distressed situations to being, at least my observations, an increasing number, still a small percentage, but an increasing number of strategic defaults now, where they just know they're just so upside down, it's going to take so many years, they'd rather take the credit hit, they'd rather take the financial implications, and as long as they can qualify for that short sale, they're going to move on. And typically, at least in my observations, I've seen this a few times with people who bought a property prior to marriage, then get married, living in the larger property, and that credit hit is only going to happen to the spouse that owned that original property, and they're already established otherwise. So they're saying, it's just not worth it for me to keep eating this monthly financial loss, and especially as we go into the problem with many of the communities won't let them lease their properties, so they're forced into sell at a big financial loss, continue to pay, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd just like to go one step back. You originally asked why would people do a short sale, and I think the key thing that the audience needs to understand is it's a financial benefit. When I say a financial benefit, it's less credit damage to move forward on a short sale versus a foreclosure, and many people who have gone the foreclosure route don't realize the advantages available to them. You know, they talk about a foreclosure falls off your credit report in 7 years. Well, reality, if everything else is clean and good in your credit life, you can recover from a foreclosure and qualify to buy with a vanilla loan in 4 years, maybe even 3 years if you're really, really good. But a short sale will let you do that typically a year earlier. A short sale will typically ding your credit report as much as 100 to 150 points less negatively than a foreclosure will. So there are some distinct reasons that it says it's fortuitous to take that route instead of just throwing your hands up and letting it go to foreclosure.
There's a big emotional factor as well. For instance, the Department of Banking and Finance has licenses for loan originators. And if you file bankruptcy, you still get your license. But if you just ignore your debts, then you don't. On a short sale, you have negotiated debt that you can no longer meet with the lender and come up with a mutually agreed upon solution. A foreclosure, they had to resort to the remedies in the contract and enforce them. Mm-hmm. And it looks like you just ignored it and walked away from it and threw your hands up, which in our society is less responsible than negotiating a compromise. Right.
Yeah, that's exactly what we tell. We don't use as nice language like that, but we usually tell our clients, we say, look, a short sale is you taking action. A foreclosure is you not taking any action, and a bankruptcy is you taking action to ensure that you're not going to pay anything, and so that's why we always, you know, short sale is from in my mind is to avoid a foreclosure situation. It's not necessarily just a strategic option when you're underwater.
It's also a more dignified approach. I mean, you take the foreclosure. You get that notice, you know, you've got to be out in a certain amount of time. You take the short sale route, you're still living in your home, you're still having your lifestyle that you're used to, and then from the perspective that you move out on your time frame, whatever you're going to, another rental, whatever the property is, it's a more, as I said, it's a more dignified approach to exiting this difficult time.
It's funny, in Georgia, we've had clients, and they'll disappear. They'll have some sort of shame associated with the short sale for some reason. In Florida and some other states where I've got friends that are real estate agents that do short sales, you sell your house via short sale. It's high five. You sold your house. That's the only way you can sell your house in that market. So naturally, that's normal there. For here, it seems like it's a different, and I think a wrong mindset, because you're taking action and getting the highest price that's available for the bank, for your neighborhood, and for yourself. So I think that's so much better than just walking away.
Mm-hmm. And one other aspect, we're talking everything about the seller's perspective. If you're a buyer out in the marketplace, the downside of short sales is the unknown time frame, how long it will take until it can close. But if you're a buyer out there, if it's a foreclosure, what does a foreclosure mean? They couldn't pay their debts. They couldn't pay their bills. Typically, you've got much more damage, and you've got many more repairs associated with the home, because if they couldn't pay the mortgage, they couldn't keep up on the maintenance on the home. In a short sale, they're still living there. I would say 9 times out of 10, and that's probably generous, it's more than that, you find a much better product, much less cost to move in by purchasing that short sale when you're still looking for the distress sale, financial advantage type purchase.
Sure.
Plus, I think you get a better price more often than not with a short sale over a traditional sale in today's market. In the Atlanta market, there's a severe lack of inventory right now.
Correct.
So you don't have much to choose from, and that pushes prices higher. A short sale has a little bit of a tainted image, and I think that's a benefit to buyers because sometimes you can pick those up cheaper. Now, you don't know if it's going to close in 30 days or 6 months, so you do have to have a patience factor, but a lot of times it's a good bargain.
Very true. Well, we're listening to Squawk Talk today, and on our special panel of guests today is David Perry from Perry & Associates, Tal Kramer from Atlanta Communities, and Joshua Jarvis from the Jarvis Team. So let me throw out a scenario to you and see if you can explain why banks have performed like this. A friend of mine was going through a divorce. The only thing they had in their names together was the house. And the attorney said, if you can sell the house, it'll make everything a little easier. There was not going to be a highly contested divorce. It was just ready. The bank, so they had to sit, they were upside down in the house because the market values had shifted. And the bank said, we're not going to accept the short sale unless you're late on your mortgage. They had to go 6 months late on their mortgage before they would even consider the short sale. Why would a bank want somebody to be defaulted for 6 months before they'll even consider working with them?
I was going to jump in on that because I get very frustrated by this. I've gone to Bank of America and Wells Fargo seminars, and they make this bold statement that, no, you don't have to miss a payment to qualify. Well, poppycock, you know, if anybody says that anymore. The reality is, if you put yourself in the bank's shoes, they kind of take an attitude, we're going to have to take the loss. If you've proven that you can continue to pay that monthly mortgage payment, why should we eat the loss? So nobody will ever tell me this, but my feeling is they just won't seriously consider it unless there's some really extenuating distress circumstances. And they make you miss those payments. They make you do more damage to your credit. And I think it's so wrong, because if you qualify as the criteria for qualifying for a short sale, why do they need to make you go through that garbage?
I think that it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was literally telling a story about SunTrust today, that they'll put you on hold and say, if anyone tells you to miss your payments, you know, you should report them. And then the negotiator comes on and tells my client, because they wanted to speak to him directly, and told him that, look, your payment's almost due. If you don't make this payment, then I can approve you. Otherwise, I'm denying the short sale. And it was just, it's one of those funny stories. But the reality of it is they don't care about the short sale unless you've got an offer, unless you're behind. And to me, you know, you think about, well, why would they do that? And I think it goes back to just something really simple. And that is, if someone's paying you money and then they want to pay you half of what you're owed, why would you? Now you're already paying me. Just keep paying it. Mm-hmm. Why would I ever take half of that until I know that you can't pay it? And we always tell our clients, we say, you know, what you want to do is paint the picture of that the light at the end of the tunnel is not a light at the end of the tunnel. It's a train. And if they don't take the short sale, they're going to get the house back. And that's what you have to prove in every short sale case.
You know, I'm sure David obviously closes significantly more short sales than any of us here. But, you know, my observation is that whenever I get somebody says, no, I don't want to ruin my credit, and I want to continue paying, and I'll pursue the short sale, even if they approve the short sale, that's when the bank's coming back to them, asking them to do a seller contribution. I had one this year. They had to pay $20,000, and they were willing to do it because they had never missed a payment, and therefore the bank didn't see a true distress. They qualified under the criteria, moving over 50 miles and job relocation and so forth, but you know, I don't think they ever would have asked them for those kinds of funds if they had been missing payments along the path.
Mm-hmm. Probably not, and that's kind of one of the ways that short sales have changed recently. A lot of factors. The economy's improved since the depth of the Great Recession. Housing prices have risen substantially this year. Again, that's in pockets. But I think Tao was absolutely correct. The lender's saying, well, I've been getting payments every month. I think I'm just going to hold my breath and hope they keep coming. So we're not approving any modifications, short sales, distress situations. And what Josh talked about, it's really kind of humorous to me, although some people might not think it is. But it's against the law to advise someone not to make a mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. The Georgia Predatory Lending Law came out in about 87, and then it was gutted because everybody was going to pull out of the state of Georgia because it was the most onerous laws in the nation. But even though they gutted it, a lot of it's still there, such as it's illegal to advise someone not to make a mortgage payment. Mm-hmm. But mortgage companies do it.
Yeah.
And so a lot of realtor friends that I have, they'll say, I can't tell you not to make a mortgage payment, but I will tell you they probably won't approve it if you're current.
or they'll ask you to pay
more
money.
It's your decision. Right. Yeah,
right,
your decision.
Right.
Well, I think the pay more money thing, the economy has improved. Prices have risen. A lot of times it might be an $80,000 debt that you got out of for $20,000. And that's really not that bad. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the worst things that people – the worst thing that anybody can do is nothing. Mm-hmm. So people stay in the houses. The houses are $100,000 underwater. They go, oh, well, the prices are rising. It's going to get better. In reality, they're not going to continue rising at the same rate they had the last year. That was kind of a catch-up because of – homes being sold under the cost mm-hmm. of replacement or construction. In addition, it was the first round of feel good, and it was a quick run up. Hopefully we'll continue to have appreciation, but I don't think at the rate we've seen in the last year.
No, probably not. I know in our neighborhood, houses were selling for about 30% less under value, and so the rest of us were like, what are you doing? And they were just trying to get out from underneath their mortgage.
Correct.
But we're all concerned about how that's going to affect our housing prices to be able to sell. And if we have to sell, are we going to be facing a short sale because of our neighbors that just jumped out of the market because they were just trying to, let me just get out of my mortgage and selling it for 30% less? Are we still seeing some of that? Or are we seeing some of that because the prices are coming up? Are we seeing the recovery from that a little bit?
A little bit of both.
Well, I think also, I publish a real estate report every month, and I'm really a data junkie. And I'll tell you, I always repeat, you've got to pay attention to your area, your product. What's happening in Metro Atlanta at large may have zero to do with what's happening in your area. You could have an area, you know, I live in East Cobb, but I serve North Atlanta. You could have an area like East Cobb that's appreciating very nicely, but if it's a condo product, no, it's still going to be underwater for many years to come because they're like widgets and so many of them have gone into foreclosure and short sale that it's going to take years and years to get back to your previous value. So you have to look at it. And then I keep alternating locations, but I recently did a zip code analysis. And if I remember my figures right, for the last month of September, zip code in East Cobb 30062 went up 6.7%. Well, the East Cobb homes that are in 30075, which is predominantly Roswell, but there's a section in Cobb, those went up 27%. So you cannot use generic numbers. You have to talk to your realtor and say, tell me about data for my location, my product, and even within that, my price range within that location. Mm. And then you can really know what's going on in your area.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at a house that's $100,000 and now it's selling for $150,000, and everyone's like, oh, everything went up 50%. But then the houses in Hamilton Mill have only gone up, 8 or 9% total. So you've got to look at those things. You've also got to look at its basic economics. What's the supply versus the demand? How many homes, how many months of inventory on the market? And what you've seen is that we did have a nice run up during the summer. And everyone's starting to sort of catch wind of that, and the inventory levels are starting to rise, and it's starting to become more – it's still predominantly a seller's market under a certain point, But it's starting to come up more and more balanced.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're listening to Squawk Talk today, and our special panel guest is talking about short sales. Joining us in the studio today is Joshua Jarvis from the Jarvis Team, Tal Kramer from Atlanta Communities, and David Perry from Perry & Associates. So we've talked about things where the market is becoming a little bit more traditional market and sale, house values are coming up. How long is the short sale process generally taking today from when somebody says, so the bank says, okay, we're going to be able to approve or not? Or is there a general time frame?
Pull out your dice and roll them.
That's a good answer. So. I've had one go as little as 1 month, which was a local community bank that had pre-approved the short sale before, you know, the price was even set and was put on the market. And I had one that went 11 months. But I would say, you know, you guys chime in, I would say the average is about 3 months, 2.5 to 3 months before the bank responds, and then you're looking at about another 30 to 45 days till it actually closes.
I agree, about 4 to 6 months. Mm-hmm. We have currently have about 200 in process at our law firm where we're helping realtors process those.
No, that's the homeowners are from the point the homeowner decides they're trying to offer the short sale to the bank approving.
Contract to closing.
From contract. So somebody's made an offer on a short sale to closing 4 to 6 months.
What we believe to be a good offer. Mm.
Yeah, if it's a decent product, you know, in today's market, you'll go 30, 45 days at most before you've got an offer. So the issue isn't getting the offer. The issue is how long it's going to take for a response. And, David, doesn't that significantly vary institution to institution and negotiator within an institution to another negotiator in the same institution?
Absolutely. of course, Bank of America is probably the largest lender in the nation because they bought Countrywide years ago. But, you know, you call Bank of America, you can't say, well, this is the way Bank of America does it. You can say, this is the way Bill at Bank of America does it, or this is the way Mary at Bank of America does it. And a lot may have to do with how long they've been on the job, because this is not something that people knew how to do. They just hired a whole bunch of people 5 years ago and said, we got to process these short sales, and they've been figuring out as they go along. They're better at it, but it would take another 5 or 10 years to get really good at it, I think.
Look, I won't tell you which institution, but this is a true story, and I know it's not the norm, but couldn't get a response out of the negotiator for about 45 days. No emails, nothing. They wouldn't respond. Later learned that the person went on maternity leave and nobody took over their files.
Wow. Yeah.
That's probably normal.
For us, it's running about 90 days. It is institution by institution. You know, I have no problem naming names. I mean, if it's Aquin, if it's GreenTree, if it's SunTrust, we've got different timetables for all of those. You know, in some cases, be prepared to speak to someone that's in a completely different time zone that, you know, that may or may not understand what you're saying. And you know, and I think that, I mean, obviously you're doing a lot more volume than I am as far as 200 files, so you're probably seeing a lot more of this, but you know, it's not just is it Bank of America, it's actually who owns the actual loan. They may just be the servicer, and so you've got to go several levels deep when you're talking to these negotiators or processors or whoever it is that's on the actual
typically loan. It's not the servicer, so well, we'll run that by our investor.
Well, I think let's back up, because
it's often Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or FHA.
Right, and I think that the audience, the listening audience, probably doesn't understand that concept. It's good that you brought that up, Josh. Most of us think if we're paying our mortgage payments to Wells Fargo that Wells Fargo owns our loan. You have two different entities. You have whoever actually owns the loan, like David said, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, a pension fund, a REIT, something of that nature.
Life insurance company. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Out of Germany.
Yeah. And then you also have who is doing the servicing. And even though your loan might be sitting with Fannie Mae, that whole package could be serviced by Evergreen, who then sells that package over to, you know, Wells Fargo. You are not – they are not the decision makers. They know the criteria of the package, but the decision maker is that individual investor, which is part of the reasons that – the same institution doesn't give us the same answer all the time.
Right. Well, this conversation started about time periods. I heard a good and a funny one yesterday from the buyer's perspective. It's kind of like having a baby. It's going to be 9 months of misery, and then you're going to have a great day.
Yeah, it's actually, Tal, that's it's interesting that you'd bring that up, because as a property manager, you're – your industry is what I use to explain that to our clients, that concept of that someone that's collecting a check, but there's actually some owner that owns that loan, you know, and so that's where that process comes into play. And sometimes the people that are collecting the check have the authority to make a decision, mm-hmm. and sometimes they don't.
Right.
You know.
Very good. So if somebody is out there, the buyer out there, there's a lot of talk I hear from real estate agents, they're having homeowners, having buyers having trouble finding homes because the inventories are low. But you got somebody who's saying, well, I want to focus in on those short sales because I'm willing to not have to compete with the investor groups who are just buying up big chunks of thing, and I'm willing to take my time. What kind of advice can you give to those buyers who are looking for the short sale, the deal on the short sale?
Patience. It's not for every buyer. First of all, if you're the typical buyer, the traditional buyer, my home's under contract, I've got to find another one and close within 30, 45 days, I don't want to move twice, forget it. Right. You should not, you know, when I set up searches for my buyers, even though I sell short sales, I'll typically exclude anything that might be a short sale simply because I know I can't give them the time frames they need. So the very first question as a buyer is, what are your options? What is your flexibility? I think for first-time home buyers that are in apartments where they can get out of the lease, they're living still with mom and dad or something like that, oh my gosh, that's perfect for them because they've got that open window of time to get it resolved.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. What I would also add to that would be is that, you know, it comes down to the agent that you're working with and how much experience have they had with the actual short sale process so they can sort of vet the listing agent because you know, hopefully they're with David, but if they're not, then how much experience do they have with that short sale process? Do they have timetables? Like, I know how long it takes us on a typical, if it's a Bank of America deal, I know how long it's going to take based on the information I'm getting from them. And I have a track record that agents can pull up and actually see, okay, he's closing them. And is that something that the other agent can do? So if that's a closing agent and they're great, or they've got it with a great attorney that they know that's going to close it, then it's going to be a much more of a sure thing that they should spend their time on. Or, you know, that's where you hear all those nightmare stories from, is that, you know, the agent doesn't know what they're doing, the seller doesn't know what they're doing, and then, of course, we all know the bank doesn't know what they're doing. So
and they're good people. Right. They're just trying something they don't know a lot about.
Right.
So, you know,
that was
Josh
actually leading
Tao.
Into my next question, is what's the advantage of using the attorney who's familiar with the short sales and the real estate agent who's familiar with the short sales?
Because if you haven't done it before, you'll make innocent mistakes that'll cost you a month or two. So you've got to know how to write the hardship letter to illustrate to the bank that, you know, there's not a great likelihood that these payments are going to keep coming because we have had a job loss or a medical problem or a transfer. And if you haven't written very many hardship letters, you're probably not very good at it.
Well, David, you're being nice. I really think that I really think that's not strong enough. I really think that if you don't know what you're doing and you're handling a short sale on the listing side, or even an attorney that hasn't handled it, I mean, you're not costing the 2 months or 2 months. You could cost the homeowner their house. They could fall into foreclosure. I know that when I first started that I didn't know anything I was doing, and we almost lost the house, the very first house that we started on the short sales process. So, you know, luckily that's 5 years ago. But, I mean, that's how a lot of the agents started, and it's almost like dumb luck that they get to the closing table. And yeah, I think it's a very dangerous thing.
Well, it's such a new phenomenon. All the agents in Metro Atlanta had to learn through on-the-job training.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, you compared your explanation about short sales to property management. It's actually a similar comparison. Everybody, you know, because the economy's been so bad and so many real estate agents haven't been able to make a living with fewer sales in over the last number of years, they'll put their toe in the water and do a short sale. They'll put their toe in the water and do a property management. And like you say, they don't have the experience. They don't know what they're doing. You know, I'm not here to toot David's horn, but it's like my explanation when I'm sitting with a short sale seller, I'm actually saying, look, I don't care how many I do, I will never have the experience of Perry & Associates that's got 150 to 200 in the pipeline every month. the advantage of listing your short sale home with me is I'm going to put it with him mm-hmm. because they have the skills and experience and negotiating experience to actually help us reach that end goal. And the same thing, if your firm's doing 150, you're not beginners anymore. Right. So, you know, it's so critical for the listener to understand you just can't go with, you know, Aunt Sally, who's a real estate agent, and take a chance on your property management, on your short sale, and anything that isn't normal vanilla sales.
Well, even vanilla sales. I mean, it's a six-figure decision. Right. And a lot of people just use it. It's a six-second decision that they make on the phone on the first person who calls.
Mm-hmm. When I was early in my real estate career, and we've been doing this over 20 years, I remember my very first broker making an interesting statement to me. He says, people will typically shop longer for the, and this is 20 years ago, the $20,000 car that they're going to buy than they will for the real estate agent to sell their $200,000 home.
Yeah. Wow.
It's so true.
It's very true. So we're listening to Squawk Talk, and today our special panel of guests is talking about short sales. Joining us in the studio today is Tal Kramer from Atlanta Communities, Joshua Jarvis from the Jarvis team, and David Perry from Perry & Associates. So let me ask you this. Have you ever experienced where the banks have absolutely just refused a short sale and it's forced it into foreclosure?
They have.
Yes.
And it's very frustrating because I'll have a knowledgeable real estate agent about a particular area, just like Tal was talking about and Josh was talking about the Duluth area. They know that area. They've had the property listed for 6 months. This is the first offer they've gotten. It's at 140. The bank says, well, we got a BPO, which is an acronym that stands for Broker Price Opinion, and it's another real estate agent who may be local to that area. They may be from the other side of town.
Who may have gone in the house or may have just driven by.
They did not go in the house. They only pay them $35 or $50 to do a PBO. They don't put any effort into it. They go online. They get two or three comparable sales. They tell the bank, oh, it's worth $175. They're wrong. The bank turns down the short sale. And as convoluted as this system is, we've had that happen. They've absolutely said no, started to foreclose. We withdrew the short sale, started a new file with them. Oh, we got a short sale. Canceled the foreclosure, and we're starting down the road again from new.
You know, it's when you ask if institutions turn down, we have a client that was a tenant at one of the properties we manage. And it was a nightmare. They had a home in Chicago that was upside down. They relocated to Atlanta. And they had a first and a second. And the first kept approving the short sale. They had three contracts. The second kept denying the short sale. Now, you want the punchline? Mm. The first and the second were both with GMAC. Different
departments.
You might
as well be dealing with banks from different countries.
Right. Mm. I mean,
the fact that they're owned by the same parent makes no difference.
And it still goes back to the investors again. Who really has that mm-hmm. debt?
Yeah, my experience has been I think David's dead on. And so the issues that we've had with any of the short sales has all come down to the evaluations. They'll send somebody, you know, from South Atlanta to do an evaluation on sort of North Gwinnett. And they don't know the area. They're getting paid $40 to drive out there. They're upset because they don't have a key to get in.
I don't think they drive out there very often.
Not for $40 from South.
Well, we've had them on the phone, and you know, they're having to go by and take a picture with their cell phone, and hopefully not waste a lot of time out there. And so that's caused problems. But you know what we found is that when the bank says no, it's kind of like sales 101. When they say no, it's just you didn't ask the right question, or no, not yet. And it could be no, not yet, that they've not been behind enough, or no, not yet, you know, you didn't fill out a certain piece of paper the right way. And it all comes down to that. So it's like David said, you just resubmit, you keep resubmitting it, and they go, oh, like all of a sudden it's a new conversation all of a sudden, even though we're using the same thing. We haven't lost any in a long time, but a lot of it's because even though when they do get denied, we just resubmit them, and it's like, oh, fresh start again.
And the long-term advantages for the seller are just tremendous. The banks, to approve you for the short sale, you need to be in default. So people quit making their mortgage payments. So you have 5 or 6 months during this process, you're typically saving the money that you had been making on mortgage payments. Yes, your credit takes a big hit, but not as big a hit as if you went through foreclosure. And quite often, there's a seller incentive, which can be up to $3,000 for Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac, up to $750 for an FHA. So you can get move-out money, plus save all those mortgage payments, and your credit doesn't get dinged as badly.
Absolutely. Going back to something Josh just said, and this goes to this whole discussion of experience and knowing what you're doing. One of the things, these BPO valuations become problematic, but one of the things that we found that's been smart, and originally we got the advice from one of the negotiators working in David's office, is once we list it, day one, we set a fixed time period every 2 weeks. We'll keep adjusting the price, and we'll keep adjusting it. And then when we go back, or when David's office goes back to the bank, they have this history, this listing history, to say, look, we tried your 170, we tried your 165, we tried your 160, and we didn't get an offer till we finally had it at 150. You know, again, it comes down to the individual negotiator you're dealing with, but if you're not smart enough to have these prices, and then going back to experience, I'm sure we've all seen this, there are agents who don't know what they're doing. They put it at a price that'll cause an immediate sale, and it's too low. It's artificially, it's unrealistic. So, of course, the bank's going to say no thank you to it.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. If the somebody's seller is looking to put their house in the market, they know they're upside down. They've maybe consulted with a real estate agent initially and said, you know, the house should, you're only going to get $150,000 for the house. They owe $200,000 on the house. Is that, do they wait? I mean, I know you can't tell somebody to stop making their mortgage payments, but generally do they have to wait until they have a contract that goes starts this process to then start defaulting on their mortgage? Or do they plan that ahead of time? Maybe they've met with a realtor and they say, okay, I know I'm going to have to short sale it, so I'm just going to stop, and then I'm going to meet with a realtor.
I think the money always looks better in your bank account.
Yeah. The disclaimer again: we can't advise.
You can't advise people. I'm not. Okay. We're not disadvising anybody to stop.
You increase your likelihood of having a short sale approved if the bank does not think they're going to get their money.
And you typically, most people don't make that plan ahead of time. They make that phone call to their agent. They go on the internet. They research short sales. And my experience is most of them, you fall into two buckets. You either are already in a financial hole and you've been missing payments before we get involved, fine. Or when we get involved, we explain all the things we've just been explaining, and as soon as they make the decision that they're going to go the short sale route, they typically at that point will stop making the payments. We do always advise them, if they're, especially in condos, if you're in an HOA, keep making that HOA payment. Because there's other complications that comes out if you keep missing those. And it's
under Georgia law, the only entity with more power than an HOA is God himself.
Yeah, I always say that too. I think the reality of it is you're dealing with people who care about how high your grass is and not necessarily the overall financial situation that's going on there.
Did you get your trash cans in by 6 p.m.
Exactly.
On the day of pickup?
Exactly. Well, that's very interesting, because I think a lot of people think, well, they have to wait until this, or they make these decisions without consulting. So the first thing you would say, obviously you're not going to tell somebody to not pay their mortgage, but is to get some professional advice. Talk to the real estate agency. You may not have to. You may think
well, I'd
you
like
have
to make an extra point on that.
Yeah.
Get some extra advice today.
Today.
Because the Georgia Mortgage Relief Act of 2007 says you don't have to pay tax on forgiven debt due to a default situation or a distress situation. It expires December 31st.
Of this year. Yep.
If you get some expert advice today, get your house listed this weekend, get a contract next week, you're going to be lucky to get it closed by the end of the year, but it should still be your goal.
And so what's changing for next year?
You'll have to pay tax. So if they forgive $60,000, I don't think they will. That's what I'm hearing. But if you sell it for $60,000 less than you owe, the bank is likely to send in a 1099 for $60,000, and it's supposed to be listed as ordinary income on your tax return. And if you're in 28% tax bracket, you know, it's roughly $17,500 in additional taxes that you'd rather keep.
Nothing like putting a hardship on top of a hardship.
Exactly.
Yeah. Our government at work.
Indeed.
Well, you can do a follow-up show. There's a lot of great CPAs. I'm sure David knows one that'll help you to get out of that situation. The other thing I'd add to that, Kate, is when we teach classes on this, on the short sale topic, one of the things that we use as our sort of litmus test for a short sale is if you're pulling from your savings to make the payments. To me,
don't ever take money out of a 401k or an IRA to save a house.
Mm-hmm. In our mind, or even a savings account. That even if it was your Dave Ramsey's, you know, 6 month emergency fund or whatever, I still think that if you're pulling money out, that's a short term solution. And too often we'll have someone call us and they've emptied out all of their accounts, and now they're at wit's end, and that's
because they've got now they're nothing.
Right, and they didn't have to do that.
Yeah, excellent.
You know, Josh said earlier about that this is a high five if you do a short sale in Florida, and here it's still sometimes has a stigma to it. I think it would help the audience to realize that this is a common everyday occurrence. I mean, I just pulled some numbers before coming here, and we've got right now in Metro Atlanta, let's see here, the data shows that we had from January to October over 3,300 distressed sales in Metro Atlanta. And that's out of 41,000 total. You know, that's still a good chunk
8%.
Of sales. Yeah, there's a lot of people, you know, taking advantage of it. And when you look at it, you know, it's the distress market isn't as great as it was last year, and that's a good sign of the economy, as mm-hmm. David alluded to earlier. But it's still, you know, last year was 3,457 short sales for the same time period. I mean, distress sales, excuse me.
And so, it shouldn't be a stigma to do what's in your family's best interest.
Absolutely. Right. You know, and it goes back full circle. You're better off, you know, it's a dignified approach. You go back and you're in your home and you're staying there and you're moving out at your pace as opposed to, you know, the bank putting a notice on your door saying be out next Thursday.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Very good. Well, I'd like to thank our panel of guests for being on the show today. You've been listening to Squawk Talk, where we talk business to business. As we close out the show, I'm going to ask each of our panel guests again to tell us a little bit about your company, yourself, and how people could find out a little bit more about your services. We'll go backwards this time. We'll start with David Perry from Perry & Associates.
I'm David Perry, and Perry spelled P-E-R-R-I-E with Perry & Associates. We're primarily a real estate closing firm. We also have an attorney on staff that handles family law, divorces, adoption, child support modification. I started in the title insurance industry, so I've got a long history in real estate and really enjoy handling it. If anybody has any questions, perrylaw.com is the website. Look us up.
Very good. Thank you, David. Next is Tal Kramer from Atlanta Communities. Tal?
Thanks, Kate. This has been enjoyable once more. My wife and I, as I said, 21 years residential real estate sales and property management, North Atlanta, predominantly from Midtown up north and the west side. And you can find information about us at mydreamhome.com, and we're here to serve and answer questions.
Fantastic. And finally, but last but not least, Joshua Jarvis from the Jarvis team.
Yes, we serve Gwinnett County and the surrounding counties around Gwinnett. We've been doing real estate for 11 years. You can find us online at gahomes.digest.com, and you can just Google Joshua Jarvis, and you should be able to find me on the internet, and that's actually what we say. If you can't find me by Googling my name, then you shouldn't call me at all. So, but we specialize in mainly just residential real estate, as well as short sales, of course.
Very good. And I'm Kate Skirmerhorn with Eagle Carpet Care and Restoration, taking care of all your floor cleaning and restoration needs. To listen to this show and other Squawk Talk broadcasts, go to squawktalk.businessradiox.com. Until the next Squawk Talk, when you're ready to get the job done right, set the eagle in flight.